Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Just hoping to dazzle produce because we came on the air and he heard me off the newspaper and I busted out the four jumble clues. By the way, I assume Mike Pratt's not here again?
No, he is not.
He's standing me up. I feel shunned.
I think he's writing his name on some books or something, so, you know, duty calls.
He's signing books? He wrote a book?
Yeah, he wrote a book.
He did?
Yeah, him and Tom Leach.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I thought you guys were friends. What the hell is that,
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, he's at some place called the Spotted Newt somewhere in Kentucky or something. I don't know. Him and Tom Leach are writing their name on books.
Well, that's a bunch of crap that he didn't even tell me. You know why? Because he's afraid he'll have to give me one.
Yeah, no, hey, I get it, man. I get it. That's one of those things. It's like, hey, can you get me a book? And they hand you the book, and then it's like, all right, that'll be $29.95. It's like, whoa. I thought you were giving it to me because we were friends, man.
I mean, what's up with that, Braddy?
Yeah. That's awful.
Braddy, blown off the show for starters, and then not even giving me a book. Not even telling me about
it. Not even telling you about the book.
What the hell is it called?
I don't know.
Me and Leach?
Something about something or other. I mean, it's UK play-by-play. Let me look it up on Amazon. Give that bald jerk Bezos some more of my money.
Tom Leach. Let's see. Here it is. UK legends Tom Leach and Mike Pratt. Well, they can call them both legends. Will be at they'll be at Hazard on Friday. We'll be at the Red Spotted Newt from 4 to 6, signing their new book, Kentucky Basketball, Two Decades Behind the Scenes. Well, I'm talking to Paul Rogers. We better write our own.
Yeah. I'll write the foreword, Bob.
That'll be nice.
Yes.
You'll piss off everybody. They'll all put the book down before they get to the first chapter. Because the guy wrote the foreword is an angry, acrimonious man.
It won't matter because they will already have bought the book. So it's fine.
Is that a cynical approach? Hi, if you're reading this, we're good because you've already bought the book.
If you're reading this, it's too late.
But that's not true. A lot of people pick it up and read it in the bookstore and then they would put it down.
No insane person reads the foreword, do they? Like, I mean, they buy the book.
Yeah, you could the thing is you could write, we'll get somebody else to write the foreword and then you could write the afterword, the epilogue.
Yeah, I'll write the epilogue.
Then you can insult everybody because they'll already be done.
Yes, and then I'll say if you're reading this, it's too late.
Yes, it's too late and, you know, you're crazy. Why did you buy this? I know these two guys, they have nothing to say.
No, I know Bob. I've never met Paul Rogers.
Well, that's all the more reason.
All I know him by is the one time I saw him in these studios and he was wearing a plaid shirt and I said, that individual is wearing a plaid shirt. And then that was it.
Well, you're very observant. I mean, yes.
I mean, that's what Andy and Locke were doing their show. They're like, Process, do you know who that guy is? And I'm like, who, the older man in the plaid shirt? And they're like, yeah. And I said, no, I have no idea who that is.
Really? You didn't know who Paul Rogers was?
No.
Well, that's fair because he didn't know who you were either, probably.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you don't know who I am, what the hell is my point in knowing you?
Fair. Oh, it's a courtesy notice from my public storage unit that you need to pay your rent, you bastard. I'd forgotten about that, so I'll have to take care of that. One of the 50 tasks this morning I didn't get to because I'm going out of town, going to Raleigh, North Carolina, the capital of the fine state. I'll do Louisville and NC State Saturday, and then they'll come back, and I'm going from there to Nueva York.
Which is significantly more fun.
That will be fun.
You staying in Manhattan?
The Jimmy V. Yes, we'll be staying in Chelsea. Very nice neighborhood.
Nice.
Chelsea's very cool.
Well, as long as it's not Hell's Kitchen, I hear you're fine, right?
Although Hell's Kitchen has made quite a comeback. It used to be a real, real awful thing, but, pretty good. What is this? Okay. Yeah, I already made this call. Good Lord. So we're going to have a new client coming on soon. They've been with us before, but they're coming back.
Good.
And I'm going to speak for them, and I'm looking forward to it. So I'm giving you a heads up. Blue Chew is coming back.
Oh, fun.
Yes, so we're looking forward to that. So I was getting the primer this morning about, you know, what makes it so good and what we can tell people, and so we'll be looking forward to that. So I had a conference call today, and our good friend Nate tried to embarrass me by sending me the wrong name of the woman who was on the call.
Ah.
He wrote me, her name is Gina. Her name was Barbara. But I think with Barbara, Gina ended in A. You know, could have been Rebecca.
Yeah, close
Tina.
Enough. I mean, look, I confuse Barbara and Gina constantly.
Nathan's such a good guy. Wow. This is, I know it's politics. It's not, if this is political, then you're kind of a little tiny bit crazy, I'm sorry to tell you. But they charge the parents of the suspect in the Michigan high school shooting with involuntary manslaughter. I guess because my understanding is the guy, it was the guy's gun, the father's gun, and right. He didn't secure it properly. The kid's father bought it, but then there's, you know, you're supposed to make sure that's locked and people can't get at it, and the kid just took it and then went and shot up the school. So it's such a sad story. It really is.
It's horrendous.
I'll be honest. You're appreciably younger than I am. I mean, this never, ever, 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 ever crossed my mind when I was going to elementary school that somebody would come in and shoot the place up. By the time you came along, were you guys like a tiny bit of your mind was thinking, I hope that doesn't happen to us? Or
oh, I mean, Bob, this has been a part of my life for my entire life. Columbine
really?
Happened a couple of years after I was born. And when I was in high school, Sandy Hook happened. And when I was in college, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas happened. So, yeah, this has been a pretty consistent part of my life. I don't know life. It's much like 9/11. I don't know really life without it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, because it never would have crossed our mind back then. And, it doesn't mean it couldn't happen. It's just, they call it ignorance, or they say sometimes ignorance is bliss. I don't know. But, we certainly never crossed our mind. I feel bad for the kids that, I'll tell you what we were terrified of, I mean, literally terrified of, was nuclear attack.
Right.
They would tell us, as Robert Klein said, all right, children, in case of a nuclear attack, you know, under your desk, you know, put your ass to the window.
Which is insane that you would think, you know, putting yourself under a desk is going to help you from a nuclear blast,
nuclear
whatever.
Exactly.
Tell that to the people in Pripyat and in Chernobyl.
Robert Klein, you had a great bit about that. You know, he said that they would do drill it, and the siren they would play was the same siren they would play when it was to let the kids know that it was lunchtime. And he said, I always wondered, the Russians aren't stupid. Suppose they attack during lunch. How are we supposed, you know, I could see them talking in the war room. We attack at lunch, Ivan. We attack at noon, Ivan. They think it's lunch. You know, it's true. I mean, it was very strange that it was the same signal. I mean, but, you know, kids, they're just going to get their lunchbox, and instead,
but I mean, the Russians maybe be courteous. Wait till they get back inside, you know, back inside from recess. I'm basically like, if you're gonna kill me, at least kill me after lunch and recess, and then take me down.
Recess for our play, yeah, absolutely. I mean, recess. We had whole teams organized. You know, we played according to the season. You'd play football in the fall and basketball in the winter and baseball, softball in the spring. I mean, and so yeah.
Look, Moscow. I got a math test at 1:30. If you can make it happen, then you know, chop.
You'd be kind enough to blow the joint up. Then that would be wonderful. I'm reading. I've become a bit of a history buff of late, and that period in our country is scary and fascinating. Though, so I read about Kennedy and Eisenhower for the Cuban Missile Crisis. And now I'm reading about this doesn't get nearly the publicity, but at the time, evidently, because I was way too way too little to know about this. The Russian, we were flying spy planes over Russia, and this was when Eisenhower and Khrushchev were really starting to warm the relations, and everybody was looking forward. Hey, maybe we can have a real peaceful coexistence, and of course, Pentagon people, they're always looking for that stuff. And so they were flying these planes at incredibly high altitudes. They were passing them off as weather planes to do weather research, but they were spy planes on Russia. And one of them got shot down. And they assumed I mean, this reads like a spy novel. If you want to read something interesting, you should check this book out, because it reads like a spy novel, and it's all just fact. It's all history. It's a. They shot the plane down, and the consensus for the Americans was that there's no way a pilot could survive this. I mean, there was just no way. There was 70,000 feet in the air. There was no way. And so they basically came up with a whole series of lies that, you know, that the government was going to use to cover themselves, that this was a weather plane, just got off course. Meanwhile, they didn't know the guy was still alive and the Russians had him. And it's and now Eisenhower is in a terrible situation, because if he says he denies knowledge of it, then it looks like, well, you mean somebody, a lower level person at the Pentagon, could provoke a war between our two countries? What the hell's going on over there? And if he says, no, I knew about it, then he looks like the biggest hypocrite in the world, where he's probably telling Khrushchev, yeah, let's all be friends and get together and trust each other, and meanwhile he's flying spy planes. So he is absolutely up a tree. And then it's interesting how the Americans don't really understand Russia. Everybody assumed that, you know, if you're in power there, one party system, it's everybody on deck. And Khrushchev was not. He was very much under the gun. There were people who said, you're getting too cozy with the United States. And so he's not sure what the hell he's supposed to do here. What does he do? You know, he's, and if he comes right out and says, yeah, we caught him, it's great. But then he looks like a fool for saying, why did you trust Eisenhower? They're sending spy planes. Meanwhile, if he denies it, he can't deny forever. It's going to get out, even in a closed communication country like Russia, the Soviet Union, it's going to get out. So he doesn't know what to do. Eisenhower doesn't know what to do. It's a fascinating book. It's called Mayday. It's a New York Times bestseller, and it's old, but it's a fascinating book. It's just terrific. So that's what I'm reading right now. So that's today's history lesson.
So here's another history lesson. John F. Kennedy, probably the first president to not frequently wear a hat outdoors. There you go. That's a much lighter factoid.
Yes, that is true. Like, there was one, who was the one that refused to wear one way back? You're a historian, too. The one president didn't wear one at his inauguration and caught literally like his death of cold pneumonia and died. Was it Harrison?
Harrison.
Is that the one?
Yeah. No, they're like, hey, maybe you shouldn't go out there. And he's like, nah, I got this, guys. Like, we're cool. It's cool.
I'll go without a hat. And then, see, there's mothers all over the country at that time were telling their kids, see, Tommy, you better put a hat on. You'll wind up like that Benjamin guy. You don't want to do that.
No, William. So,
oh, it was William Benjamin. William Harrison?
William Henry Harrison.
William Harrison. Who's the other one? Was it Benjamin?
Benjamin Harrison, yeah.
Was he the older or the younger?
Younger.
Oh, okay. There you go. You're good at history. I like that. Well, then you'd like this book, because it's fascinating, filled with a whole bunch of things not many people knew before. So, and that explains, by the way, why the band, where are they from? Ireland? The band U2, that's where they got their name. I didn't realize that.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So. I just thought it was a fun play, like I'm going to see yes. U2, and it's
U2,
like,
no?
That's
really?
Silly.
Knowing their social consciousness, I guess we shouldn't have been surprised that they took that name. So there you go. So there's the introduction to our show. So welcome aboard. Mike's not here signing books, doing his thing there.
Yeah.
Really, seriously, unbelievable. I mean, the guy's got to go get, you know, chemotherapy and stuff like that. And oh, by the way, today is somebody sent us this. This is fascinating. This is... was this yes? What is today's day? Today's the 3rd, right? So it was yesterday. Yesterday, those of you listening to the show know how much I love palindromes. It was not only a palindrome, it was something I've never heard of before. It was an ambigram. A palindrome is the same thing that reads right to left. Like if score was 43-34, that's a palindrome. It reads the same right to left. So yesterday's date, 12-02-20-21, read exactly the same right to left. 12-02-20-21 is the same reading right to left. But this is, I never heard of an ambigram. If you take that date and turn it upside down, it also reads the same. 12-02-2021. So an ambigram. I'd never heard of that before. So yesterday.
So when it's March 3rd, 2033, then we're in good shape. Actually, no.
Also, I believe my wife's birthday is certainly a palindrome. I don't know if it'll be an ambigram. 12-22-21. So let's see. That would definitely be a palindrome. But I don't know if it would look the same upside down at 12. Yes, it would. It would. It is. So mom's birthday, my wife's birthday, it'll also be a palindrome and ambigram day. So this is going to be a magical holiday season, my friends. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, I mean, just a little more magic sprinkled in there. It's great.
We're getting texts. I didn't know they did this, by the way. but I thank them. A bunch of you texted me. I literally, I'm not playing dumb. I did not know. During the game last night, I guess they did a whole, like, two-minute thing on my cancer, and I was not aware of that. And they showed the picture of me with the nurses at Norton's, and that was very, very nice of them. And speaking of that, Jay Billis is going to join us at 12:30, so we'll talk to him not about that, but he'll be with us at 12:30. But that was extremely nice of them. I appreciate it. And two good guys, two of the really good guys in the business, Billis and Jason Benetti is a fantastic, wonderful, nice, inspiring guy. And he was there. Dan Shulman was supposed to be there, but he had a personal thing in his family he had to deal with. And my thoughts go out to him about that. But that was very, very nice of them to do that. So I appreciate that. That was. But I'm getting texts because of that from people, and it makes my heart. I'm very happy they think of me, and I also feel for them. Thank you for this from just somebody following me on Twitter. I hope you're doing well. I'm still getting blood testing twice a year. My numbers are still high. My LDH is over 300 at this point, but no lesions, no clusters of tumors. I'm good to go. It's, you know, that's the thing I'm just trying to tell. The guy who's the SID at Furman is dealing with a terrible throat cancer. The play-by-play guy, you know, sent me his information, so would you call him, and I was happy to do that. And you know, it's it's inspiring, and it makes you sober. It sobers you in a hurry too, because there's people fighting the battle everywhere. I mean, cancer is everywhere. It's now to the point where one of two males, one in two, used to be one in three, now it's one in two, are going to be diagnosed with it at some point in their lives. But the good news in that is the treatments have come so far, and when you give money to things, not just the V Foundation, I don't want to make it sound like it's we're the only ones out there fighting it, but know that the money makes a difference. And also know that when you do that, you give hope to the people that are fighting, that they don't feel like they're out there all alone. They know that people care about them and are trying to make a difference. And so that's, you know, why we bring it up. It'll be Jimmy V week next week. I hope you'll possibly be in a mood to help us at Kentuckiana Friends of V, KFOV.org, or the national organization itself. We're really working in this hand in glove, so it's the same
thing. Hey, tagging in, Pops. What are we talking about here?
I'm not calling.
But you don't want to buy real estate. You know,
you get what you're talking about. Some guy I don't want to buy. How about, speaking of that guy, Alec Baldwin coming out very, very, you know, he says, I think my career is probably done, which it may be. But he said, I know somebody's responsible, but it's not me. That I'm not sure that's going to serve him well, because if you listen to gun experts, and I know nothing about guns, they say that particular gun has a very, very, very sensitive
trigger
finger.
Nah.
And they said that a trigger and mechanism, and they said he probably didn't realize, he believes he didn't pull the trigger, but he probably just holding the gun. He was practicing doing a draw. They told him it was a cold weapon or whatever the term they use, meaning it was not dangerous, and he probably just touched the trigger and it went off. That's what they say is the most logical explanation. He said they don't just go off on their own. So
maybe you shouldn't you shouldn't aim it at people ever, like during a
I don't think he was aiming it. I think he was just drawing it, you know.
And it went off. Okay.
Yeah, and he was drawing it and then pulling it out the holster and doing the drill that he's trying to show. He's making a Western, and the thing, you know, he touches the trigger and it goes off, and it's so tragic, it's ridiculous. I mean, that is seemingly so easy to prevent. It's terrible.
Yeah, that is a truly, I feel bad for everyone involved in that. That's a rough one. On a lighter note, a lot of stuff to get to today. Talks of, you know, things in the works. All of us here are, I mean, if they get Brom, they obviously have to let go of the coach they currently have in Satterfield. And all of us,
why do we keep talking about this? He's not coming. Eric Crawford just said it. He's not coming this year anyway. He's not.
All right. Well, I don't know. Although the lot of us have been on you know, just in case duty, you know, on standby this week. And if anything were to happen, that's what we do. ESPN, we give you all kinds of, coverage, wall to wall is what we do. I've got a poll up that we can get into, but Malik Cunningham, I know this hour is going to be airing in Lexington, so they probably aren't too thrilled with it, but is what it is. It's just, you know, this is the breaking news of the day. Jay Billis will join us in about 10 minutes to talk U of L and UK hoops, so hopefully that can appease them a little bit, but I'm assuming you saw Malik Cunningham about 45 minutes ago.
I did. Yeah, said, don't worry, Carnation, no. I'm staying home.
Yeah, so
But how do you know he meant, I'm going to be a jackwad, you know, because that's what we do in radio. How do you know he meant staying, he may have meant just staying home. Like, he's not coming back. He's going to stay at his house.
Just, I don't want to play anymore.
I'm not playing for you anymore. I'm staying home. And so if anybody wants me, they'll know where to find me.
He's going to go play for John L. over at, with the, what is it, the Bellarmine, like, sprint football or whatever, the 7-on-7 they do?
Yeah, the 7-on-7 league. But that wouldn't serve him very well. The quarterbacks can't run in that league, can they? I think they have to pass.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. I didn't know that. But
I don't know. I'm making crap up.
We talked about this, and look, there, it's not going to appease anybody. I mean, because I feel like a lot of the people, I still think the majority of the fan base are. You know, I heard it bantered around in the back with the boys. Say that sentence 9 times fast. It's the easiest decision ever. That, you know, bringing Brahm in would be an instant injection of excitement into. I mean, even the guys in the middle, like I am, would be like, oh well, you know, I wasn't sure that getting rid of Satterfield was a good call, but getting Brahm, you know, if you had to get rid of Satterfield, Brahm is definitely the decision. And yeah, of course, I'd be excited about it too. But if Satterfield were to stay, I do think that there'd have to be some changes that would appease the fan base. And I floated this to Steve Rummage, who, I mean, would be pretty much inconsolable, but said that at least, you know, the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down would be a new defensive coordinator. Sorry, Brian Brown. And then maybe bringing in an offensive coordinator, a la, you know, Dwayne Ledford they had. I mean, the best year that, and I don't think it's coincidence, the best years that, you know, Louisville had under Satterfield were with Dwayne Ledford at the offensive coordinator helm and a couple of Bobby's players, let's be honest.
You got to stop doing that Maben and Rummage show, because you come out of that and you still got the momentum working from that show, and you're bringing all hot sports takes to this show. I mean, I'm looking like saying, does he know where he is? What's he doing here?
Well, that's why it's a good balance. I come from, you know, a fan-driven show with Maben and Rummage with some takes. Then I come back over here.
I have takes too. What I don't have a take on is, let me point out the obvious again. The job is not open. That's the whole point here. It really is infuriatingly infantile to be going through your head the Rolodex of who you're going to offer the job to when it's not open. The job is not open. It doesn't mean it won't. And you could say, boy, I hope they. But to start going through the list of prospective coaches when the job's not open is, it's so far ridiculous. It's like saying, how much money did you save? I've got $37.43, and I'm trying to decide, do I want the Lamborghini or the Ferrari? Dude, you don't have nearly enough money for it. No, but I'm trying to decide, because I think next week I may be able to add another $25 to that. You're still not getting a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. So that's the whole point. Until somebody comes to you and says, here's $200,000, go pick your car out, what the hell are you doing? So that's the whole point of this. There's so many good, interesting things that are worth talking about to spend time just because you're so pissed off. If we could just talk about it enough, maybe we could make it happen. Just if we just keep talk about it till we're ready to throw up, maybe he'll get the hell out of here. Fine, that's how you feel. That's your business. The job's not open, and you don't know how many people are not going to. Well, everybody's not buying tickets. Well, maybe they're not. But maybe they are. Maybe you look at it and they say, well, from a business standpoint, it still doesn't make sense for us to fire this guy, eat what we still owe him, and then, okay, maybe some of those people come back and buy tickets. In the overall scheme, I don't know. There are the people who do that are incredibly trained in breaking all those numbers down. People are just talking out their ears here. They don't know. They literally, there are guys that make a living doing that. My friend Eddie Epstein sign is one of them, and he makes a very good living doing it. They ask him at the professional level, okay, if we sign this guy, how much more in ticket sales do you think we'd anticipate if we don't? All those things. Well, it's the same thing here. So if you're mad about him, okay, but Malik says he's coming back. You don't want to see him
play.
Yeah,
but that has nothing to do with Satterfield from
it
all
has everything
us.
To do with whether people might buy tickets.
Well, no, now like Nick,
there are fewer people. I'm going to suggest that there are a whole crap ton more people that will stay away if Malik doesn't come back than if Satterfield.
That I 1,000% agree with.
Okay, so that's my point. So these people are trained in doing that. That's what they do. They look at, okay, here's how many tickets, season tickets we sold last year. Everybody admits that the attendance was poor. I got all that. Okay, but it's going to go down even more. It might go down to here. And here's how much money we'd make for that. But if we get rid of him, now we got to go through a search process. That costs us money. Then we still owe him money. We got another coach on the payroll. So we're still going through that. We're going to have to defend ourselves against whatever comes up from the NCAA. So there's still, I don't know that they want to say, yeah, sure, what the hell? Just keep paying him, pay another guy, pay, let's get a search. It's a business. They are not running it as fans. It's not like in your ESPN fantasy league where you can say, you know what, I hate that guy. Drop. Doesn't work that way. You got to go and figure out what makes sense from a business standpoint. And I'm not saying it doesn't. Maybe it does make sense. Maybe they look at it and go, oh, my God, we're going to have 5,000 people a game. I mean, when they got to the end of Kraklov's term, that's what it came to. They were like, we just can't afford to keep them because people are absolutely voting with their checkbook. They're not coming. Okay. So they moved on. I'm not suggesting that won't be the case. What I'm suggesting is 99% of the people that are screaming about that have no idea, nor should they, unless you're sitting in staff meetings with Tyre and his business people and the people in the administrative office. This is a business. It's not your ESPN fantasy league. That's all I'm saying. And so, I'm sorry if Steve Rummage will be heartbroken. I really am. Hopefully he'll get nice presents and he'll get over it. But we don't know that that's going to be the case. Everybody talks out their ears. Well, he's going. He's going. They're just waiting because his father passed. You don't know that. Oh, he'll, Duke would be great for him. Did you call? You were the AD at Duke? Did you call down there? I mean, did you see? Is he on their list of guys they want? I mean, it's so ridiculous. Not to mention that for the third time, all I ever hear is brum. It sounds like the Monty Python song for spam. Brum 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 brumity brum. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Eric Crawford just tweeted out he ain't coming this year. Not coming. And I've gotten that from an equal number of other people that at least are tangentially associated with the Brom family. So now what's your plan exactly? Well, anybody but him. Okay, well, now you're running your business with emotion. See how that works for you. I mean, that's all I'm telling you. That's all I'm saying. I'm not advocating he should stay, he should go. I'm just saying you want to get into the minutia of what they're going to do when he goes. Well, there's so many. They got a basketball team that's in the middle of a very important stretch right now. I mean, it's like a savings account for college. All of a sudden your kid gets to college, you go, my God, we didn't put a nickel ahead away. Well, it's the same thing. You want this team to be in the NCAA tournament? This stretch in December is way more important than it used to be. When you used to play Podunk Tech and East of No Thumbs Institute and Lady of Perpetual Help, they're not playing that now. Now they got conference games before Christmas. They got two conference games before the new year. They've got Kentucky on the schedule. They're going to Wake Forest. I mean, a very important game there. They've got a DePaul team coming in that, last I checked, is still undefeated. I mean, this is when you get to the end of the year, these games are part of your resume, whether they were in December or February. And so, that to me, that I know is going to happen. I know that's going to happen. I know that Malik said he's coming back. Fine, let's talk about that. You want to talk about changing coordinators? I don't have a problem talking about that because that is the modus operandi of college programs. When they come off disappointing years, that's the first thing you do, is you get rid of your coordinators. That's just the way. It's kind of like on a radio station. When a new program director comes in, the first thing he does is change the clock. That's what they do. So that's what they do here. I don't know. You know, they're good. They're awful. I don't know. But, you know, that's not at all out of the realm of possibility. If you talk about, you know, I think that's what's going to happen. That might very well be the case, because those usually are not budgetarily driven decisions. They're not to say they don't pay these guys a significant amount of money, but I've never heard a school say, well, we're not getting rid of that guy as a coordinator because we're not going to pay him and pay another guy. I mean, that's not the issue. So you're really talking about, now that is much closer to running your ESPN fantasy team. I don't want that guy here anymore. Okay, whatever. I mean, that's the first thing they do. It's the same thing at every level, even the professional level. First thing they do if the coach is a little bit under pressure is they tell him Aaron Boone, Yankees brought him back this year, said you got to get rid of your coaches. He had to fire his third base coach because he waved Aaron Judge home when he shouldn't. He got thrown out by 40 feet in the playoffs, and everybody's mad, and so there you go. So that, I mean, I get it. That, to me, is a topic that, okay, you can talk about. But this, who are we going to get? He's not gone, and you don't know for sure that he's going to be gone. And nor, for a matter of fact, do you have any insight into, give me the spreadsheet. Break it down for me. I mean, tell me what the projected numbers are. You can't, because you don't have them, and you can't have them unless you're sitting in those staff meetings. If you want to get, you know, an assistant AD from Louisville to come join us, which obviously no school in America would have their guy do that and tell us what the numbers are, fine. I'd be fascinated by that, but he ain't gonna. And for us to talk about it is a waste of time when there's topics that are really newsworthy. I'm serious about this. I had to come by the studio today and drove on my way home and passed a group of very, very attractive, I'm not just telling you like it is, very pretty, very tall young women, a whole bunch of them. There was maybe two guys in the group, and I turn, I look, and I'm like, well, they're not dressed in red. Who are they? And then I look, and they were the Michigan volleyball team, who are here, obviously, for the NCAA tournament. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing going on for Louisville's volleyball team. And this is an area that cares about volleyball. And it's damned entertaining to watch, and to have it a magical season. I'd talk about that. I really would. You could say, oh, my God, I got to talk about volleyball instead of football. All right. Well, go ahead. Knock yourself out and talk about a situation that's not there yet. Who are you going to hire as football coach? Let me get my paper here. Let me see. Wait a minute, there's no job opening here. Oh, but the volleyball team is undefeated, is the number one overall seed in the tournament, is going to play at home. That I know. Malik Cunningham is coming back. He's playing at quarterback, and that's tremendous news if you're a fan. Everybody loves watching the kid play. That's fantastic. That's good news. You know, are the coordinators under the gun? You could speculate on that, because that happens all the time when teams have had a disappointing season, and right now there's a lot of disappointment around this Louisville team, especially perhaps disproportionately for the face plant against Kentucky. Okay, talk about that. But to keep talking about Brom, 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 Bromity Brom. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I'm sorry. I tell it like it is on this show all the time. And that is ridiculous. Now, if next week the job opens and all of a sudden he says, well, you know what? I've been thinking about it. Fine. We'll talk about it until the cows come home. But that's not where it is now. And all we hear from people who are closer to it than most of us are is he ain't coming. And there's no job open. I mean, it's just, oh, my God. It's just incredible. It is rather amazing. Oh, here we go. Let's see if I can get this to work. Kick in here.
Do you want to take a little break here, and then we'll...
That's it. That's your Brahm song. Just put Brahm in there for spam.
Jay Billis on the other side.
Spend the rest of your day singing away.
All right, let's take a break. We'll get Billis on.
You're listening to Fast Break Friday, presented by Ale 81, Kentucky's original ginger soft drink since 1926. Pick up a pack of original, zero, or cherry Ale 8 today for your next tailgate. Now, here's Bob Valvano and Mike Pratt.
Well, Mike Pratt's not here. He's off signing his new book, of course, but just big time mess a little bit. But we're here, and we're delighted to be here. Delighted to be joined by our friend, fellow V Foundation board member, Jay Billis. And Jay, before we talk some college hoop, I did not know you guys were going to do that little thing you did during the the Louisville and Michigan State game the other day. And I got texts and calls from everybody all over the country. So that was very kind of you to give kind of an update on my situation and tell people that so far, so good. Maybe some people find some hope in that because they're fighting their own battles. That was very kind of you. Thank you.
Well, we're behind you, Bobby, all the time, and you're the best. So we the truth is, we were running low on content, had nothing else to talk about. So we figured, you know, that was down at the bottom of the list. So it was right after you was Carrot Top headlining in Vegas.
Was Jay Billis's five favorite airport food places. That was going to be next. I saw the graphic they built for that. So, well, it was nice of you anyway. Let's talk a little bit. The fans want to know, you know, obviously I talked to Chris after the game, and he made no bones about it. He told everybody, it wasn't just me. He was telling the media. He talked about it. He is really very unhappy with their offense, and I can understand why. This was supposed to look like a completely different offense, and they really don't, to be honest with you. Either the guys don't get it or they don't have the skill set to get it. I don't know, but what did you make of their offensive performance, which was less than dazzling?
Yeah, it didn't flow from transition into things, so they became a not a walk-it-up team because they scored some in transition off the turnovers that they forced. But once they got into something, made a play call, it was just sort of slow. And you have to give a little bit of credit to Michigan State because they're an excellent defensive team. They're number two in the country in, you know, defensive efficiency. And that's including all the times they turned it over. I mean, they turned it over 19 or 20 times against Louisville. In the first half, Louisville's defense was pretty good, but they were in a lot of bad positions in the second half. And you know, I think Louisville's going to be good, but they've got a ways to go, as you know, right now. And they've only, you know, they're limited in the guys that can shoot it. I mean, L. Ellis was a nice surprise off the bench. I knew he could shoot it from the way he played at Louisiana, but he needs to, you know, he needs to shoot it more because right now it's just Noah Locke and Matt Cross that everybody's keying in on. Basically, find them in transition, and then other guys aren't making shots yet.
As a fellow big man, you could appreciate this. A lot of woofing around here about the fact that, you know, Jalen Withers seems to be playing to show people at the next level, look, I can shoot it from out here, and he really hasn't. And I don't know if Malik is still hurt. He doesn't seem to be moving with the same fluidity that he was before he got hurt. But they're not establishing any kind of a, you know, and you don't have to play like it's 1950 anymore, but you have to have some sort of a post presence. And those guys seem a little too willing to go step away. And, as you know, you could evaluate what they're doing in there. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of times, especially with Withers, with post guys that are trying to expand their games, you know, they want to show that they can do something to show that they're versatile. And then, you know, you say, hey, look, if you want to be versatile, be versatile. Like, you got to go inside, too, and play to your strengths. And Withers is a tough player around the basket. And I think, you know, you can tell, at least for me, what I look for is activity level, where he's best, is how many free throws he shoots. And he's not going to shoot many free throws as a perimeter shooter because everybody's going to close out short to him and late. And until he proves he can knock those things down, and so far he hasn't proven it. But Malik is still, I think, a little rusty on the offensive end. You know, I think his movement's pretty good on the defensive end. You know, I think he's one of the better big man defenders, especially on pick and roll and, and post defense, things like that. But he's never been, like, you remember when he came into Louisville, like when Pitino recruited him. I mean, he was shooting a ton of threes. You know, to this point, he hasn't made them at a high level. So that's really, you know, nobody's really worried about him doing that. That's not an issue for them. So I agree with you. Establishing something around the basket would probably be a little better for both those guys.
Jay Billis is with us here on this Fast Break Friday. Let's go up I-64 a bit and talk about the guys at Kentucky. Their only loss, the opener, to a very good Duke team, of course, and then they really haven't been challenged since, and their schedule will get a little bit tougher as we move on here. But, you know, I walked out of there thinking that, no disrespect to Tom Izzo, who's such a brilliant coach, they'll get better and better, and they'll be a tournament team, but I just thought the other three teams were a little bit ahead of them, and that Kentucky and Kansas and Duke Duke. And so I think Kentucky has a chance to be a deep March run team. And, it's unusual because he's got some experienced players on this team, which really hasn't been Cal's forte in the past. But I think he's got the ingredients to be a very good team. What did you make of what you've seen from them and what they have to do better?
I like their pieces and what they have, but they have a lot of one and dones. But they're one year, they're fifth years, so they'll be done after this year. So they've got a lot of experience, but they don't have a lot of experience together, and a lot of experience playing for Cal and the way he does things. So I think they're going to continue to get better, and I think their learning curve is a lot quicker because they've got so many older guys. Kellen Grady and Oscar Tshiebwe. I mean, it's a bummer that C.J. Frederick hasn't been healthy because he's such a good passer and facilitator, and he's zero errors. He never turns it over. So that would have been nice to have him, but they do have some go-to ability with Ty Washington and Grady. They got guys that can make shots. So they shoot it pretty well. I think they're going to be very good. I don't put them up with Purdue or Gonzaga or teams like that. I mean, I think they can beat Duke if they play well, and Duke doesn't play its best. Both teams playing their best. I think Duke's a little bit better. But, you saw the other night against Ohio State, Duke's not immune to looking young, especially on the road after a big game. They didn't handle that, I think, as well as they would have liked. If you have an older team, you're probably a little bit better off to try to handle that type of situation. They're going to be in that a lot more as we get into conference play.
Do you think, seriously, you mentioned how young Duke's team is, and obviously, I mean, you see it in the kids' expressions and when they are talking to the media. Everybody wants to send Mike out, wants to send Coach K out on a great note, but, it's hard enough to play at Duke. It's hard enough to play with high expectations. And then you add the pressure of, we got to send this guy out on a special year. Do you think that's something they got to kind of, not tone down, but actually talk about and try and get guys? You can't play basketball with the veins bursting out of your neck. That's what I say all the time, and I'm afraid that's what they're going to get to if they keep playing with this sense of unbelievable urgency for their coach.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that around the program with the way, people are talking about, hey, this is last trip here, this is last this, or all that stuff. I don't think the players are hearing that, though. Coach K's not making a big deal out of it. I think he's addressed it. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I'm not in the locker room day-to-day to be able to feel it. I didn't see against Ohio State that was an issue. I thought it was more sort of the idea that they just played this gigantic game that took a lot out of them emotionally. And I don't think they had the emotional sort of gas in the tank to be able to fight through that in the second half. And Gonzaga did the same thing. They played Tarleton State and put up 66 points. I mean, Gonzaga usually falls out of bed in the first half and scores 50 against those teams. So, I think it's a real thing. It's not an excuse. But I think the older you are, the better opportunity you have to fight through. That's why, after one of those games, you always like to have a home game against a lesser opponent, because you know that that even if you don't play your best, you can still win.
A couple of more things. I know busy time of year for Jason. We won't keep him too long, but I do want to ask about two other teams in particular, because we got rooting, people in this area do follow them. I heard you talking on the air, so I'll ask you to kind of revisit it with me. I mean, we've been doing games, as you have, for Matt Painter his whole career, and that's not to imply that he was not a good coach at the beginning, but boy, I'm so impressed with the culture he's built there, and just the vibe around that program is just extraordinary, and I heard you talking about them. So, I mean, they're definitely one of the elites as you look right now, aren't they? What makes them so special in your mind?
Yeah, Bobby, I think they're the best team. And if you played a seven-game series for the national championship, if it were like the NBA playoffs, they would be the prohibitive favorite to win it. They've got tremendous size. I mean, they start Zach Edey, who's 7'4", and heck, he's like the Chief in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He just plays with people. And then they bring Travion Williams off the bench. He's an all Big Ten big guy, and he comes off the bench. And then they can really shoot it, and they're dynamic. They've got guys that are good athletes, and Jaden Ivey's a top player. He's going to be a lottery pick. So it's one of those sort of old school building of a program things where a couple years ago, maybe in 2019, when Virginia won it, I mean, Purdue had them beat. Virginia had to do something extraordinary to force overtime. So they were a Final Four team that year that kind of got got beat out by something, one in a million type deal when Diakite hit that shot. But I think they're the best team, and having a really good mix of older, a bunch of guys that don't mind giving up the ball because they know they're going to get it back. And, when they catch it, they catch it to do something with it instead of catch it, then assess. Mm-hmm. And then when all other options are exhausted, okay, well, now I have to pass. There are a lot of teams out there like that, and they're not like that at all. I mean, they make a quick move off the catch, and so they're well-drilled together, and they know each other really well. So I don't see their numbers. Like, their worst game is probably, numbers-wise, has probably been one of the best games of some of their competition in the top 10. That's how consistently excellent they've been on an efficiency side, and they've beaten good teams. It's not like they haven't beaten anybody. They've beaten really good teams. So I would not be surprised to see them win the whole thing. They're that good.
I full disclosure, we got to know Mike Woodson a little bit when he was coaching the Knicks through some V Foundation events. And anybody who meets him says the same thing. He's a wonderful guy, very nice man. But I did not know what kind of a fit he'd be in Indiana. And it's a very short sample size. But, boy, does he look like a perfect fit. I mean, everybody just seems to be rallying around him. They put together an incredible comeback at Syracuse the other night, even though they lost in overtime. I just think he's off to a pretty good start there. What were your thoughts when he got the job, and what do you make of his job so far?
I thought it was a great hire for a couple of reasons. One, all the reasons you mentioned, that Mike is a great coach, a great guy. It's not about him. It's always about the players and the program. But also, I think Indiana at this stage needed one of their own. It's a different place and a great place. But, when they had, Tom Crean, they brought Kelvin Sampson, Tom Crean, and then Archie Miller, all guys they brought in that had no ties to the program. And when it didn't work out at certain points, like Tom had the program at number one. I mean, they were really good. But there's always that air there of, well, he doesn't understand what we're about. He doesn't understand right. IU. And they can't say that with Mike. He understands it. And they've got a good team. I mean, I don't think they're great, but I think they're very good. And the fact that they came back after a really bad start against Syracuse and had a chance to win that game was important. So I think they're legit, and they'll continue to get better.
I lied. One more quick question. I look at the top 20. There's only one ACC team in it, if I'm not mistaken, and that, of course, is Duke, who's right up at the very top. Is it really a down year in the league? What do you make of the conference?
It's a down year relative to how good it usually is. I think North Carolina's undervalued. They're a top 25 team, maybe top 15. But taking a couple losses up at the Mohegan when they lost to Purdue and Tennessee, that's going to set you back no matter what. But they're going to be right there, and I think they'll be very competitive with Duke. Virginia's good, but they're not really good. Virginia Tech is good. There are a number of teams that can beat you, but there's nobody overwhelming. And usually you've got, top 10 teams, in the mix, and we don't have that this year in the ACC. So it's Duke's to take, and I think they're the best team by far. But it's gonna be interesting because it's kind of going to hurt Duke's numbers. I think looking right now, Duke doesn't have another game in the ACC that's as high value as the games they've already played. And that's usually not the case.
I will see you in New York, my friend. Travel safe, and I'm looking forward to it. And thanks again for the other night. And we will see you. He may be one of the few guys that's even nicer than you, that Jason Benetti guy. He's damn nice, I mean, that was.
And he's smarter than me, which is really disappointing. He is so funny. My God, that guy's got an answer for everything.
And he really
the
does.
Answers are right. That the answers are right, which is really annoying.
I'll see you in New York, buddy. Thanks again, right, Jay. Bro. Appreciate it very much.
Be good.
All right. Jay Billis with us here on the Fast Break Friday. Glad that he was able to drop in and spend a few minutes with us. This time he is incredibly busy for him. He hardly ever says no to us, so that's very nice. And to answer your question, I did get UK clips when you go back and listen to it.
All right, sorry. Yeah, I stepped out for a split second there.
Yeah, try and listen to the show. It's a decent show. We got some awards.
I was out for like 2 seconds. I'm sorry.
How about Notre Dame elevating defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman to head coach?
Oh, man, I'm going to play it later. I was thinking about putting it in a three with V. Did you hear Brian Kelly's LSU introduction?
Hey, what did he pretend he had a Southern accent or something? He was just talking like this or something? Or what the hell was that all
about?
It was
like the fakest twang he tried to. It was. Let's see if I can find it real.
He's turned into a really weird guy. I did not know he was that weird. I was like, wow, this is one of the normal football coaches, but shouldn't have jumped to conclusions.
Heel turn? Dare I say heel turn?
Yeah, I'll buy that. When he said, I'll take the Cincinnati job, but I'm not abandoning my team at whatever the Michigans he was at. I forget which one, Central, Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern. I don't know whichever one he was at. And, you know, for the bowl game, I was like, wow, that's impressive. That's what it should be. These kids, it's their biggest game of the year. They're going to a bowl game, you know, and he stood by them. And then he abandoned Cincinnati to go to Notre Dame. Now he's abandoned Notre Dame on the cusp of a national championship playoff spot to go to LSU. And he told everybody, well, I came back and told you, person, what do you want from me? I mean, you got 3 minutes of my time. It's very important. I got to go recruit. So I'm going down to Louisiana, which, by the way, if anybody who, like I do, studies accents, that's a weird, I don't mean it like, I'm from New York, which is a weird, it's a very odd, wait a minute, don't play it yet. It's a very odd accent. In fact, there's a stretch of people in New Orleans, I know this is going to sound crazy to you, but I promise you it's true. They sound like they're from Brooklyn. I don't know why, but they talk exactly like the people in Brooklyn do. And I noticed that because I was one guy I met, like, was a friend of Jay Gardner's, and I said, so were you from Brooklyn? He said, no, I grew up in New Orleans my whole life. And then I was like, hey, that seems really weird. And then I met another guy talking like that. I had the common sense not to say it because I was like, oh, my God, that's a thing down here. So if he's going to try and catch the accent, he's not going to get it in a day, that's for sure. But, okay, let's listen to him, hopefully not rivaling Meryl Streep for appropriate accents. Here he is.
Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans, and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
Yeah. It wasn't as bad as I'd heard people talk about. I've heard worse. I mean, you know who else has a weird accent because of that? Joe Namath. Joe played at Alabama and played his whole, I guess, 4 years there, and he's got a Western PA accent, which is also rather distinctive. And so you put them together, and he's got some interesting pronunciations of things. Okay, here's my question. It's going to be a non-Tuesday Twitter poll because I don't know what's going to be going on.
By the way, Mike Pratt's joining on the other side. He's going to give us a little call. And then
because he heard me shame him, I assume?
I don't know about that. And then we're going to play Chris Mack's press conference.
Okay, well, that sounds tasty. What was I going to say?
You said you have to leave.
I got to go to the airport. I got to be there at 3. They're not going to wait for me. So
yeah, okay. So you're leaving at 2:30. So we're going to replay that Billis interview.
Oh, you can't beat that. 2:30.
So there you go. So it should be
Dickie V's having surgery today. God be with him there. So I'm not sure what that's all about. They can't just treat his stuff with drugs like they did for me. So I'm concerned. So hopefully it'll be he's going to have surgery and then get the chemotherapy. So we're keeping our fingers crossed for him. Everywhere you look, it's just cancer. So hopefully he'll do real well. He looked great the other day. He looked fine, you know. He's in our thoughts. All right, so here's my non, go from very sober to very flippant, kind of. Okay, I'm driving today. It's a simple. I love these kinds of Twitter polls because there's very little reading involved. Okay, which? It's one of those. Which? ? The choices are Corvette.
And you're putting this up there. You're putting it up on your side.
Okay, I'm putting it up during the commercial break. It'll be up. Corvette, Camaro, Mustang. What could the fourth one be? And you can't put like Ferrari
Firebird.
Or Maserati. Those are that's another. Firebird or Thunderbird. Do they still make T-Birds?
Yeah, dang it. That's a.
I don't think they do.
That was Pontiac, right?
Yeah, Pontiac doesn't even exist anymore, right?
Yeah, but you're going old school. You're going Corvette, Mustang. Well,
Corvette is still made, and they look fantastic.
You got? Did you put any Dodge up there, a Charger or a Challenger? Jamie wants a Charger.
Well, all right. I don't think Charger will win, but I'll put it up.
All right, so Charger, Corvette.
Mustang.
And what's the fourth one?
Camaro.
Okay.
Chevy Camaro. Because there are people, actually, I'm dazzled by that. They prefer the Camaro to a Corvette.
I feel like you should only have one Chevy up there. You can't have two Chevys.
Nope.
And two Dodge. I mean,
sorry.
No, you're taking one Dodge.
Because part of the deal for me, I was almost just going to make the poll Corvette versus Camaro.
Well, maybe you should do that, and then you should take the winner of that one.
No,
and put it in
no,
a poll
we're not turning into one of your tournaments. No, it's my poll, and I'll put up what I want. So that's what I'm putting up.
Okay, fine.
So you guys can vote on it, and I think that the Corvette will win, but I don't know because there are some people that are very loyal to the Camaro. Oh, I thought about do they still make the Z's? Those used to be great. When I was in school, they how old it is the Datsun Z's? But now they met Nissan. Nissan still makes Z's, don't they? Sure, they do. There's Nissan Z 2022. Yeah. Oh yeah, the 370Z.
I didn't know this, but evidently Pontiac did put out a Trans Am this year.
Oh, Trans Am is a good choice. And also, I'm thinking
I don't know, man. You might. Ooh.
See, that'll be good. Now, I knew my listeners wouldn't let me down. We'd have a good game. So let's put Trans Am in there.
Okay. According to this, though, the upcoming Pontiac is expected to hit the general public by the end of 2021.
We don't want that car hitting anything.
Granted,
let's start with that.
Folks at Trans Am Depot get everything sorted, including compliance with U.S. regulations. Also, with an expected price of around $115,000,
the
2021 Trans Am won't be cheap. So I feel like that's something you would put in with like a Ford GT or something like, you know, I mean, if you're in six figures, you're in.
I don't think these cars go for six figures. They're close.
What, like 55 to 70?
Well, I don't know. You know, right now, as Jamie points out, the cars are in such demand, they're charging like 15% above Blue Book or unused cars, and like 15% above suggested retail for cars, because everybody there's such a backlog of people demanding stuff. So what should I think I'll make the Nissan Z. You're talking without knowing again. Go look at the picture of it, and it sells for like $50,000.
I'm not saying it's a bad car. I'm just saying that I feel like it's a great looking car. It's a great-looking car. I don't know if it's in the same ilk. The other ones are kind of like classic muscle cars. You know what? It's your poll. Do what you want.
The Nissan goes back to when I was in high school,
Do what you want. But I don't think... When I think of classic muscle cars, I think of Mustangs, Corvettes, Firebirds, Trans Ams, T-Birds, Challengers, Chargers. Like, I don't think of a... I mean, that's a sleek car. Don't get me wrong. I would love that car. But I don't know if I necessarily put it in the same vein. That's all.
All right.
But it's your poll. I kind of like throwing in a little curveball too. Like,
yeah, but see, the list of muscle cars, a true muscle car, really is from an era from the mid '60s to the mid '70s. I mean, the people way more well versed in cars than I. My understanding is, it was a high performance American car with a large displacement V8 engine. Most of them were rear-wheel drive. So if you're going to look at that, then we're talking about really old cars. We're talking about, what are you talking about? Some guy don't want to buy real estate. You're talking about, Pontiac GTOs, Chevy Camaros, Ford Fairlane Thunderbolts, the Plymouth Barracuda. But I'm talking about modern cars now. Let's see. This is the best muscle cars for 2021 from Car and Driver. Dodge Challenger, Ford Mustang, Chevy Camaro, the Corvette, of course, is on that list. Let me see what else. Did I leave one out? Because what's so funny?
This texter says you got to put the Zastava Yugo on there.
Yeah, my Yugo. I'm putting a Charger on. That's going to be the last one. All right, so that's my poll. So go on there and vote, and let's see who wins.
Corvettes are over 100K. You got all domestic cats on the list. The Z doesn't belong. Keyword,
okay,
American.
So I took the Z off.
Get the Z out of your brain. This guy was mad. Corvettes are six figures. Are they really?
It's a final. Dansby Swanson and Team USA soccer player Mallory Pugh are currently engaged.
Oh, good for them. By the way, I didn't know this. I know he was on a lot of our airways yesterday. By the way, Cram the Van, shout out to everyone for helping out with
cramming
that.
Did they cram it?
Oh, dude, I think the number this morning was up to 65K after an anonymous 5K donation. We got the Diener Challenge BBN yesterday. I forgot what the amount was. I think it was like 1500, something like that. But on the take, they were out there at the Kroger in Stony Brook, and Santa came by, which was great. They also had face painting, but they... The guys on the take came up with the idea they if BBN would rally and donate, I think, like 1800 or something like that, Diener would get a wildcat painted on his face. And sure enough, they did. And there's a great photo circulating Twitter of Streebs throwing an L's down and Diener throwing an L's up. And he is an adorable little putty tat. He looks like Mr. Mistopheles from Cats. It's fantastic.
Very nice.
And but I didn't know this. I didn't hear this. Tom O'Grady and Focus. They were fantastic yesterday.
Is that the guy was the beef? The place with the beef?
No, that's Beef O'Grady's. This is Tom O'Grady. He's the head of Focus, and Focus like donated like 20K yesterday because they were matching nice stuff work in the morning. They were fantastic. But he said this Focus actually is starting to this texter passed along. It's been popular with patients going through chemo as a drink that patients with chemo can handle. And this texter says, "Can we please send a few cases of it to Dickie V?" And I kind of like that. I kind of like that sentiment because
sweet.
The new mint, pretty tasty, I must say.
Speaking of mint, I have to tell you the truth. I never get this because it's so high in calorie. But I had the peppermint shake at Chick-fil-A yesterday. Oh, my God.
Yeah, not bad, right?
Oh, my God. I mean,
as we get more
worthy of perhaps committing a small, low-level misdemeanor just to get your hands on one. That's how good they
are. You know, our name ends in O, Pop, so people in the city might take might take that seriously.
So good. That's so good. That'd be the only one I have because I can't keep having those. But boy, was that good.
Sounds tasty. Later, as we get deeper into the holiday season, I've got a poll. It's going to be a bit of a home field advantage for eggnog. But it's I have an idea for what is the best and or worst seasonal holiday drink. And right now, the only choices I can think of right now are eggnog and mint juleps.
Because wassail. Wassail. That's a drink. Spiced holiday drink. Wassail.
Oh, yeah. That's what Tom Wassail's nickname was.
Exactly.
Spiced.
The wassail recipe. What goes in a wassail is it's 8 cups of apple cider. Let me jump to the recipe here. Here we go. It's 8 cups of apple cider, 2 cups of orange juice, 1/2 cup of lemon juice, 4 whole cinnamon sticks, 12 whole cloves or a teaspoon of ground cloves,
whoa,
1/4 teaspoon of ground ginger, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. So there's no booze in it, though, which you'll disqualify for a lot of our listeners. But you combine all the ingredients in a large pan, bring it to a simmer over medium-low heat, reduce the heat, and continue simmering for 45 minutes, then ladle into mugs or cups, nut cubs. Don't put on a small bear. Put in cups.
Aww.
And then enjoy. So there you go. I don't think I've ever had wassail.
I don't know if I have either.
Wassailing. I'm singing a lot on the show.
You are singing a lot today. So you're making Jack's job a little tough because the mixtape's coming up today, 5:30, locally here in Louisville. And I'm sure Jack is cutting you busting out a couple numbers. You should make wassails for everyone. You made egg creams for everyone. That was fun.
Oh, those were good. Now you're making me wish for one of those. I'm going to New York now. I'm going to the home of the egg cream. I'll probably get one while I'm up there.
Yeah, you owe me pizza, by the way. 437-968 UPS Jobs text line.
I'm not bringing pizza home. I may bring bagels home.
Okay, that's
no
fair.
Way. I'm
that's fair.
Pizza.
Yeah, a compromise leaves everyone a little pissed off. That's perfect. 437-968 UPS Jobs text line. I'm going to work two in here, and then we're going to get to break. I have a 1963 T-Bird. It is not a muscle car. It was marketed as a personal luxury car. I didn't know that.
Well, there you go. Well, it's not on the list, so you're happy to hear that.
Another texter says Corey Lannery sounds like he is from New York when he's actually from Louisiana.
Yeah. See, that's what I mean. this guy, right? This is when people, you're ruining my poll, Greg, to buy, because I put on the bit, which? Camaro, Mustang, Corvette, Charger. He wrote, to buy, to get as a gift, to rent for the weekend, as a midlife crisis car, need more details. No, that's the whole point of the which. Interpret it as you will. And by the way, it's closer than I thought it would be. Right now, Corvette leads 35-32 over the Mustang.
Wow.
How about that for a good ball game?
Well, it is more expensive. A couple people said it's not fair that, you know, it is one of the pricier cars. But nonetheless, you can vote on that Bet Rivers Twitter poll at ESPN V Show on Twitter.
I assumed you were going to do the other one, which you wrote could be a segment. And that, of course.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that
the
later.
Fantasy team for fast food places. You have a $15 budget.
We're definitely going to get to that later on as well. But the hour that's going to be playing in Lexington was Billis's interview and then our meeting with Mike Pratt on the other side. So we need to get to break. We need to get Mike Pratt on. And I'm rolling, Dad. I'm sorry. For all those of you listening on the PNV Network, our friends in Lexington, our friends in Frankfurt, locally here in Louisville, more of Fast Break Friday presented by AL81 on the other side, the luminary Mike Pratt. He'll join Bobby V. So thanks for listening, everybody. Emanating from the ESPN Louisville studios, it's Fast Break Friday.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.